Welcome to the Sports Ethics Podcast. The Sports Ethics Podcast discusses the many ethical and philosophic issues that arise in and around sport. I am Sean Klein, the sports ethicist. You can read the Sports Ethicist blog at sportsethicist.com, where you can download podcasts of the previous show, the Sports Ethicist show. This is a reboot of the show, but you can download podcasts of the old show, subscribe to the podcast, find links to related information. The Sports Ethicist is also on Facebook and Twitter at Sports Ethicist, and you can email the show at sportsethicist@gmail.com. Today is September 25th. Some of the recent scandals, at least in the NFL, have brought attention to many ethical issues in sport. One of these is the old debate about athletes as role models. Do athletes have special responsibilities and obligations? Should they craft themselves into good role models? Or is that just something extra that a special person does? So to discuss this question, I brought in friend, colleague, and frequent guest on the Old Sports Ethicist podcast, Mike Perry, Associate Professor of English at Rockford University. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. So this question, right, I mean, it's indirectly raised by these scandals, right, which are obviously individuals acting quite the opposite of role models.
Right.
You know, the Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, and others. So indirectly it raises this, okay, well, how do we want our athletes to act? Do we think that they ought to, by being in the public eye, that there's some special level of obligations that they've incurred? Or do we just expect them to be like the rest of us, right? Or do we even make special exceptions for them in terms of saying, letting them get away with more stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the genesis of the idea of our discussion today. So what are your thoughts?
I would say yes to all of those.
in a
sense that I think one of the different, the idea of role model or being a role model, and I think sometimes are we equating that with simply staying out of trouble and behaving? And if you stay out of trouble and behave in whatever you do, are you a decent role model and then go about your career? Or are you talking about, you know, that's one way to look at a role model. Then I think that's yes, right? You should behave. You should follow the rules. You
right.
should be a decent citizen. We all should. Should you be a role model? But that's going above and beyond. Do you set yourself above everyone else in your field or in your area? And to me, that's a different kind of question.
Yeah.
Right? I don't necessarily need my boys to look up to an athlete as a role model, but I certainly don't want them to look up to an athlete who misbehaves.
Right. There's lots of different ways to try to think about when we say, oh, well, they have, there should be role models, or, right, that they have. So that's one way to think about it. Well, should they be role models? Should they take on this mantle, right? And you have the famous Charles Barkley comment, I'm not a role model, I'm just a basketball player. And to an degree, I have a lot of sympathy with that idea. I play basketball, I'm fast, I'm big, I'm tall, whatever, I can shoot a ball. That doesn't make me an expert in moral behavior or someone else should look up to for general guidance, maybe in terms of basketball as an athlete, but not necessarily as a general person, because an awful jerk can be really good at basketball.
Can be a really good writer. Can be a great artist.
Exactly. That's the other aspect. This isn't something that's necessarily special for athletes either. This is a question that comes up with celebrity in general. And then, of course, we have the special phenomenon today of people that are celebrities for no apparent reason. It's hard to know. Right? What exactly are you good at that you're a celebrity? But there is a celebrity culture, but it does seem to a degree that we hold athletes to a different kind of standard than we do actors or writers and so on. That they, even though the question does come up to a degree, it does seem like that we hold them to a special place.
I think we do. I think what's interesting with athletes is that we want them to be role models. We want them to stay out of trouble. We want them to play hard. But we also want them to be modest.
Right.
We want them to follow the rules after the game. and say, "Oh, it's about the team. We want the, you know, if good somebody if someone goes beyond that and kind of gets excited, then we'll judge them as well." So I think we put on. Whereas if a singer kind of goes off on about, I don't know, shows ego, we're like, well, that's part of the artistic. You just kind of deal with it. That's kind of who they are.
Well, that's why it was almost even hard to say that, because it's when do they not show that?
Yeah, you know, because it's part of that art. I think that level of artistic freedom that we allow them. We don't allow the athletes that we want them to. And I think that's the one issue that I kind of have is like, let them be human. But
yeah, and that's interesting is because I think that's really more the, in some ways, the root of the question. Not so much should they be role models or anything, but why that there's something special about athletics or sport in our cultural conception that is different from other aspects of people who are celebrities. And it may be, and so that's an interesting question about why that is, and should it be, right? Because it may be that there is a difference, and there ought to be. I mean, one way I think about it might be that just given the culture of sport and the team aspect of most sports, obviously not all sports, and the other aspects of it in terms of sportsmanship and this belief that we have that sport makes us better people, that it develops moral character, things like self-discipline and restraint. You talked about modesty, right? So, you know, modesty in victory and composure in defeat. Like we don't think it's appropriate normally for an athlete to, you know, cry and beat their chests and pull out their hair, right? And then on the flip side, you know, doing cartwheels on the field after they win, right? You know, maybe that's acceptable at the Super Bowl, but or the, you know, after the World Series or something like that. But just any given game, we tend not to like that. Although you see after every tackle in football, people celebrating. But people are critical of that. And so I think there is this sense of an expectation of a certain kind of character, moral character, in sport that I don't think we look at for other disciplines that have celebrity. Maybe we should, or maybe we shouldn't for the athletes either. I mean, that's kind of the that's kind of the question here is why sport? And I do think it's the role that sport plays in our lives from a young age until adulthood, the role that play and games as well have in our lives, and the way we look to those as formations of our character, right or wrong. But I think they have an effect on our character. Whether it's the effect that we think it has is an interesting question. But it does. There is an effect on our character that we get from engaging in these games and all this time. And so I think that's where a lot of it comes from, is that we have this idea of the athletic sportsmanship, this character of the athlete and of sportsmen that carries over, and so we have these expectations of them.
I think you, when you put a camera in front of it and it gets broadcast and it gets taken out of its context, the field or the moment or the game, and those different levels, because one-on-one or in smaller things, I can kind of taunt and play and do some of those things, like if we're playing hoops down at the Y or something like that, because we understand that it's meant to be humorous.
Right.
It may look... But that same thing, if you were to put a camera and then broadcast it, they might say, "What a jerk."
Oh, absolutely.
So how much of that, you know, when we see that going on, we're watching it, we're not getting the narrative. So we right away kind of apply this almost kind of Puritan-esque kind of thing where we want everyone to be so well-behaved and so... And I just find that I find that interesting. On the other hand, I was just watching football last week and somebody was doing the whole... They get the first down. It was the running back, and every time he pointed that he got the first down. That bothers me, but I don't know why it does.
It bothers me because
it's just a first down, man.
It bothers me when it's just any typical first down.
Yeah.
If it's if it's a really important first down in the context of the game, and there's a lot of then it's exciting. Yeah. Although if it's the other team, it's like right. So there was something you said that I wanted to come back to. So I remember now. It's talking about putting the video on it, putting a camera on it, because there is a sense of that does take it out of some context. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking, just, you know, comparing it to other professions that people are engaged in. If every single one of your classes was on YouTube for anybody to watch, that's frightening, yeah. Right? Because, you know, you say, I know I do, right? I say things that are really stupid, that are wrong, that are incorrect. Mm-hmm. My students corrected me the other day. I was talking about how Area 51 in New Mexico is, no, it's Nevada, right? So I was like, you know, but, you know, and so that's, oh, what an idiot. I can't believe he's teaching in a college class. He doesn't even know where Area 51 is, right? Or something like that. Or saying something, you know, so you make mistakes or you say something that might be misinterpreted out of the context where mm-hmm. they just have a clip and the teacher's saying something. And so that would be frightening to me. So, I mean, to have your job there on national television that millions of people are watching and any mistake you make is there. And then not even just your job, right? I mean, because it's not just the game, right? It's your life outside the mm-hmm. game is on TV, is part of fair game for the media. And so every action you take is potentially something that could be on the news.
And maybe that's why the media coverage after post-game interviews, all of those things have become so incredibly
bland
and boring, because if they're not, you're going to get in trouble. You know, it's almost a self-protection thing.
Yeah.
So when they interview, it always amazes me, they interview the managers after every baseball game and they say the stock phrases.
Absolutely.
I'm like, well, I'm just like, what's the point of this? Why,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
why do it?
You know, I listened to the Belichick post-game and it's almost amusing because people ask questions and he's a master of this and he just won't answer a question, mm-hmm. right? But and it's the same thing, same phrases over and over again.
Yeah.
It's like, why do they even bother? Like, why don't they, you know, are they just waiting for him to make a mistake? It's
yeah.
been 15 years. He's
and
not going to make a mistake.
That's what they're doing, though, right? They're waiting because every once in a while somebody will
yeah.
get fired up, do something, and then they got...
Well, and then kind of, you know, back on point and sort of mm-hmm. like connection to some of these NFL scandals and behavior of the athlete. Just last week, right, Tom Brady got into some trouble, let's say, criticism. Better word, not trouble. He didn't get into trouble. He was.
I didn't know he was. He could get in trouble.
Yeah,
that's,
no, yeah.
Wow.
The boss, several members of the media in Boston and then nationally, kind of took him to task a little bit because he refused to really comment on the Ray Rice situation and Goodell mm-hmm. and all this, and just sort of saying, "Look, that's above." I think his answer was something like, "That's above my pay grade. I'm just focused on the game. I'm focused on preparing for the game next week," which is what he says all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, this is what he says to anything that's outside the context of the game. And that's the standard sort of patriot way, right? You don't comment on those things. Some people were critical of that, saying, look, he's in a position where he can have, there's a lot of ears and eyes that are going to see and hear this. And so he's in a position to maybe influence, maybe have an impact. And so because of that, there's this implication that because he's in that position, there's some obligation
mm-hmm.
to take advantage of it. And Brady and others have refused to. And so some call it cowardice. They're afraid of their image. Some would say on the other side, they'll understand it and say, well, look, you know, what can he do? Right? It's a no-win situation for him. I mean, because what could he possibly say? Right? Is he going to say, like, well, yeah, I'm against beating women and child abuse
yeah.
and covering it up, right? I'm against all that. Right? Of course he is. Who
right.
isn't, right? So what is he going to say that's really going to add to it? And so you understand, well, maybe it's better I just not say anything so I don't say something that someone's going to misinterpret
mm-hmm.
and make it seem like, oh, well, he's defending Goodell or he's defending Ray Rice or something like that, when maybe they're just, because oftentimes, right, there's a lot of nuance to these things. And if you try to pay attention to the nuance, you get eviscerated, right? Because they just, oh, well, you're supporting child abuse.
Yeah.
No, I'm trying to give some context maybe to what's going on. And so people, it's easier to not say anything. And
yeah.
so that's, but then the response is, yeah, but you have this special power. And, right, so therefore you have this responsibility to do something with that power.
Maybe the term then is not so much should an athlete be a role model. I mean, that's part of the question, but what are their responsibilities?
Right.
What are their response beyond the game? Because of their position, because of their voice is heard, because their actions are observed, what are their additional responsibilities? Even as a as a teacher, we have additional responsibilities within the community when we are out. And at least I feel like that on some level. I'm in the community. I'm representing the school, even if I'm not. You know, if and so I feel like that's something.
I'm less skeptical about that, or I'm more skeptical rather about that. I wonder. I mean, I certainly think as a human being, I have obligations and responsibilities and ways that I ought to act and not to act to be a good person, and those are things that I think are there in virtue of being a human being, living in society among others, and wanting to live a good life. And so I think the athlete has those as well, and I think we as teachers have them as well. So I'm not sure, though, what other kinds of special obligations would be there. Now, maybe as a teacher, right, I have certain obligations to my students, to the institution that I work for. But out in, so do you have a thought, like an example, like what kind of obligation might be there as that isn't just an obligation to be prepared for your class and to grade fairly and those kinds of things?
I wonder if I took on another public role, I took on some sort of visible role, I would keep in mind that at the same time it's myself, I'm also connected to
this institution,
an athlete who is going to take a public role in whatever that is. That there comes to make that decision, they have to understand that they're not doing that as an individual, they're doing that as a member of a large organization, as a member of a team, and as you know, to me it adds that if somebody's carrying around a trading card of me, then I think I do have a more responsibility, or if they have an action figure of me, if I'm allowing myself to be marketed to children, then I think, gosh, then I really do have more of an even a more concerted or focused obligation toward.
Okay, like what though? That would be beyond what you would
I have to
on...
watch what I say in public. watch what I do in public. I can do whatever I want to do if I'm not being filmed, if I'm not being that, live your life, do that. But
yeah.
But gosh, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that, you know? I mean, cuz it sounds fine. But then how does that really cash out, and how much different is that from the obligations you just have as a human being, right? I mean, I guess one way maybe to think about it is not so much that, well, you got to watch what you're saying because you're being marketed to kids, and so you don't want to use a cuss word or something like that. But then, part of it too is if your audience is kids, then you want to try to craft your image in a way that's more palatable to the parents and to the kids. And so that I can see where maybe you can take that on and recognize that it would be unwise for you to act in certain ways because of what it would do to, for lack of a better word, your brand, of who you are. And I don't mean that cynically. I mean, I think that's a perfectly acceptable way to think about it. Sort of, well, this would be unwise because it would harm a lot of what I'm trying to do. And so if that's what we mean by having those special obligations, then I don't think I have an objection to it, except that those aren't really obligations. It's also a way of how do we think about morality. I don't often think about morality as obligations. I think of it more in terms of wisdom and how to act well in the world, rather than something that's an imposition on
right.
me.
Oh, yeah.
Now there are things that are obligations that I think exist because of relationships that you have. So whether it's with the institution or with your students or with your wife or with your kids, and so on, that there are obligations given those things. And so certainly in your role as a public figure, a public athlete, that might come with certain special relationships, and so that might incur certain special ways in which maybe you ought to act. So for example, I think being available for autographs, you know, depending on the sport, but like certainly like in baseball, like during spring training and stuff like that. I'm not saying, well, you're obligated to do it, and if you don't, you're a bad person. But I think you're better off, both as a player and as a person, if you do that, right? Mm-hmm. If you make yourself available, I think you get more in touch with your fans. They're more in touch with you. You become more part of the community, and all those factors that I think that give you good reason to do that. If you don't do it, I don't think you're necessarily a bad person.
I think that should be a choice. Should be a choice to do. You're not going to be liked. And then the thing is that you could do that and be a perfectly decent person, but you because of the microscope you're under, oh, this guy's...
He's a jerk. He doesn't But I mean, you could just be an introvert.
Of course, if you're an introvert and you're going to be famous, then...
That's something you need to deal with, right?
You got to deal with it.
Yeah, you got to learn to overcome that to a degree. You know, and another difference, I guess, maybe with like actors and some other celebrities, is that a part of what they're doing is trying to be famous. I'm not sure that that's always the case with the athlete, right? Now, I think they understand that celebrity comes with it, but I think for a lot of it, they might just be trying to excel at the highest level of their sport, and so that comes with the public thing. And so, but it's so there is another difference there, I think, that might be worth paying attention to, is that they go, the celebrity folks, like, you know, an actor, they go into it in a sense because they want to be famous. I'm not sure the athletes have that same conception to, you know, across the board.
Well, and I'm not sure they even say celebrities go into they want to be famous. I think that's partly the case, but I mean, if you're talking about, I mean, depending on if you're talking about different actors, different,
yeah, an actor, I guess,
singers,
could say, you know, it's just about the art,
passion,
yeah,
the art, you know, the art. So it's, I think there's that concept too.
Another aspect of this discussion is, to a degree, something that I think is an empirical question, and we've talked about this offline a lot. How much of a real impact is there with athletes and other celebrities on kids, right? I mean, we often hear this argument trotted out, right? Mm-hmm. How's this going to affect the kids, right? And how do you explain this to the kid? And you know, they're watching this and they're going to ask, like, why is he playing? And you have to explain this. And certainly that there's some truth to that. But I do wonder really how much of an impact it really has. How much of a kid's character, view of the sport, and view of the world is really formed by the way an athlete behaves.
I would say it's not much. I mean, I what am I? I'm not.
This is anecdotal, right?
What I would say is that a kid's parental reaction to the athletes,
okay,
is formative. So indirectly, if things happen when Tiger Woods scandal kind of came out, I think the parental, the way in which the parents dealt with it, the way in which the parents described it and contextualized it, I think that would teach that really did teach the kids something.
Right.
And so I think you could say that indirectly. Then it does have an effect, but I think it's more like I would imagine it's more the adults around the child,
yeah,
and their reaction.
Yeah, that sounds right to me too. I mean, my son is still too young to, know what's going on with any of this, right? He's still trying to figure out what a first down is.
Someday he'll put on a Cardinal hat and he'll figure it all out.
No, he won't. He won't. He won't. He better not. right, but
Jets.
That's not even funny, man. That is just so not funny. But right, that the effect that they have. I mean, partly I think even the parental effect is not probably as large as we think. But there still might be an indirect thing through their peers. That how do their peers talk about it? So the parents might still be in their mix. I mean, again, I don't think it's a binary thing.
No.
Right? I mean, I think there is an effect, and some kids are probably much more affected by the athletes, particularly maybe if that's like their favorite athlete. So some 8-year-old kid, 9-year-old kid in Minnesota who Adrian Peterson was his favorite player. He had his jersey and big fat head on his wall and stuff like that. Trying to make sense of that, that's probably difficult for that parent and for that kid and for the peers around him. So, you know, I don't deny that that exists. But I just more generically, you know, and, so, and of course, that's also kind of a unique case, I think, right? Where most of the kinds of cases we're talking about are just guys that are kind of being jerks and doing some more minor things. I mean, this more stuff that we're talking about these days with Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson, not to necessarily put those in the same camp, it's just that they're happening together and they both involve some violence. Those do seem, I think, more special cases, right? I mean, most of the time we're talking about other things that are maybe not as bad, or maybe they don't look as bad now in retrospect, given these new cases. Right. I mean, we were talking about that with the Pittsburgh
Bell and Blunt, and they
don't look so bad now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I around fantasy draft, everyone was like, "Oh, should we draft him? I don't know," you know. Yeah. And now they kind of look, "Oh, fine," right? You know, they thought they were going to get in a lot of trouble. Now they probably won't even get in. Well, they might get in a little trouble if they get
probably a fine or something.
Maybe a fine or maybe a game or two or suspension, depending on how things work out legal system wise. But I guess the point I was trying to make is that moment where you have to like really sit down and explain to the kid some of these uncomfortable things, probably not as common as we think, or maybe in our imagination, right? I mean, you mentioned Tiger Woods,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the only time I've ever kind of mentioned, yeah. It hasn't been common. I don't ever remember anything happening when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like that. So I do think it's kind of, I think it's exaggerated, and I think the current state of our media exaggerates it even more so.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, look at I was watching something where they showed the statistics, and within the NFL, their crime statistics across the board are significantly lower than the national average. So,
yeah,
go to the Chrysler plant and get their statistics. Go to a big university and get statistics of everybody that works there, and you're going to have higher crime rates, but yet they're not videoed. Again, so it goes back to that, taking something out of context, putting it on video, shapes our...
Yeah, I think it's something like 15% of the national average is their arrest rate in the NFL for comparable age group. Now, the part of that figure, too, though, is that 50% of those arrests, even though they get a smaller number of arrests, are domestic violence.
Are domestic, yeah.
So it's not to say that there isn't a real issue that the NFL has here with domestic violence in particular, but to characterize the NFL as a bunch of thugs is grossly wrong.
Right.
Most of these are good people, and it's a small number, and it's just but that small number is engaging in behavior that is abhorrent, and. You know, and the effect that that has on kids, you know, and then what could other athletes do that is going to have an impact? Like, what could Brady say that's going to, I mean, is Brady saying something really going to have an impact on a kid, on a parent, and what they're going to say to their kids?
And I think even having Brady say something, if he did say something, you could go the other way of saying, well, what right do you have to speak about this?
Right.
Keep your mouth shut.
Well, that's the no-win situation.
That's why I appreciate more just staying out of it.
Right.
It's, was it Harrison who jumped in on the... Yeah. I think it was him who stuck his foot in his mouth on something about that.
He's done that a few times, I think, similar to this. But, I mean, he's been a very vocal critic of Goodell, and I think he's reveling in... that he's not alone anymore.
but I don't know the specifics, so I don't want to speculate.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's just it's a curiosity to me. I do wonder what the effects are, because I more generally, right, kids, their behaviors and so on, my understanding is that the main contributor is peers, more so than parents, more so than other factors. And so it would be surprising to me to hear some idea that the athletes have this great impact on them. Which isn't to, that doesn't discharge any of these obligations that we might have, but I think it might lessen some of this concern that we have. Mm-hmm. If it, not in these cases, right? I mean, obviously, I mean, the Ray Rice type cases, you know, but in cases where athletes might be misbehaving in ways that are just not, they're not necessarily criminal, but are maybe not noble and honorable ways of behaving, right? Or engaging in you know,
The Vikings cruise boat,
yeah,
thing. I think they were. I know there was some kind, you know,
right. Or you go back to like the Cowboys White House, and they're just doing a lot of drugs and stuff like that. I don't. Maybe there was other stuff going on there too that wasn't appropriate. But there's different kinds of ways in which people might misbehave, and oftentimes when we're talking about the role model thing. And these special obligations, that's often what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? No one's saying that, at least I hope not, that we ought not to hold the Ray Rices of the world to the standard that we're holding them. Of course we should. No. We should have been holding
them. Two different questions.
Yeah.
Role model versus how do we respond to these intense acts of violence, and how does that shape our person? Two different kind of... Well, not
right.
Too different, but yeah, but they're part of a similar spectrum, but they're different.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of where the question came from mm-hmm. today, right? Is kind of looking at these cases, not like Ray Wright, not so much because we're thinking of him as a role model, but although he was, right? I mean, that's what's interesting.
Yeah,
is here we have a guy who sort of seem to fit the image of what mm-hmm. those who say, oh, athletes should be role models and do all these things. He seemed to do all those things. He was, you know, went to all kinds of charity and other kinds of events like that, and was a pillar in his community, and the community loved him, and he really gave back and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, that, I guess I'm not sure where I'm going with that.
That's the hypocrisy of okay. how we follow sports. I think in the sense that as long as you appear to be like this, then we'll accept you. We won't worry about it, but we don't want to know about what you are underneath. Not to say it's good or bad, but I mean, there's this almost like this willful need to not know, and I think that yeah. goes back to how we want them to respond. And send. I mean,
yeah. Well, then you know, I'm torn.
They might
on that.
Complicate things and become human and contradictory as we all are, and then
right.
that doesn't fit the narrative.
Well, you know, I was thinking just also connected to like celebrities and stuff. Like, I don't like to see like my favorite actors or performers like go on to like a talk show. I mean, I don't want to watch those because I don't want it to have an effect on the way I think about their mm-hmm. their art, their performance, or whatever, right? Because you know they start talking about something and I was like, oh, really? Like, why are you saying this? I don't want to know this, right? Because it can really ruin your enjoyment of their work. And sometimes maybe it's not that I want to keep it hidden, mm-hmm. right? But I mean, so you know, what's his name? Mel Gibson, for example, right? I mean, how can you go back now and watch Lethal Weapon and just enjoy it for the fun of that movie that it was, or Braveheart even, right? Because, but knowing Mel Gibson and what he's done more in of recent mm-hmm. I mean, nothing, not really on the order of anything else we're talking about here, but, you know, and certainly some of his values are in contrast to some of my values, and so it makes it harder to enjoy the art. It's hard to separate those, and so it's
Kramer.
What do you mean?
The guy from Seinfeld.
Oh yeah, didn't he have like some yeah. racist remarks or something like that?
Pretty,
Chevy Chase too, I guess, on Community, got fired from that. And I mean, it's a tricky thing because on one hand, you know, it's not that I think we should keep those things hidden or that they shouldn't ever voice, and I think people should be able to should voice their opinions. But I also, on the flip side, it does sort of affect the way you might enjoy mm-hmm. their work, whether it's the athlete or celebrity, and so it puts, I think in some ways it puts them in a hard position, right? Because you should use your power, your position to affect change, but if you do that, of course you're going to incur enemies, right? People are not going to like what you're doing, right? I mean. Bono is a good example of that. Someone who, now he, I, I think he's quite sincere in a lot of what he does, and some of the work I think he does is great. Some of it I think is misdirected, but it's, you know, and it hasn't affected my enjoyment of U2, but...
In a sense, that, when you think of Bono, in a sense, that's a refreshing thing. I'd rather have someone who I admire on something or disagree with, but at least I see them acting human.
Yeah.
Doing things, right? I mean, we were talking about the lack of political, the lack of causes, the blandness, you know, of so many of our current athletes. We're reading in my class right now, you know, about Muhammad Ali, and here's somebody who, you know, spoke explicitly about what, you know, about issues of...
Yeah, what does Derek Jeter believe about anything?
Right.
Yeah, you know, no idea.
Because you don't want to hurt the brand. You don't want to... You want everyone... And so there's two very different types of...
Right. I mean, I agree with you about what you said about Bono. At the same time, it can be really annoying, right? If you're at a concert and, you know, he has this reputation I don't know if he does it so much anymore, but he used to, like, you know, he'd go on tirades and rants and stuff. Mm-hmm. Springsteen does the same thing. You know, a lot of guys will do, a lot of performers will do that, and that, you know, they have a captive audience. I'm not surprised that they don't. But it can be annoying, particularly if you don't like the point of views that they're sharing. I mean, even if you do, you might be annoyed because you're like, I came to hear, you know, the river, not Springsteen's view on labor politics or something.
And maybe that's the difference, where I can read a book by an author who I know is a complete nut job, and it's fine because the author's not there and I just have the book in front of me.
Yeah.
Right, whereas if you're at a concert, you can be captive, if you're watching a sporting, you know, they can, if they turn that on or do something, then that can be.
But so, it is sometimes hard to compartmentalize that. Even, I mean, so we're in my office here and I'm looking at some Heidegger books that are up on the shelf. And I mean, Heidegger was a Nazi, you know, and so whatever you might think, I happen not also to like his philosophy either, but so that makes it easier to not ignore him, but to not have to think about this issue. Which, what if I was, you know, really the Heideggerian ideas about being and ontology and all this stuff? If I really thought that those were, you know, the appropriate ways to think about the world, and yet he's a Nazi, that would be... It's hard. It's hard. It would be hard to differentiate his personal political views from his philosophic views. Now, I think you can do it, but I think it can be a challenge, particularly when you have something as abhorrent as Nazism, and then you start to wonder, well, are they connected, right? And they don't have to be. And I think you'd have to come to the conclusion that those were two different things, right? That person's Nazism or white supremacy or whatever sort of thing that they might be advocating that you find abhorrent or just against your values, that if you see it as something distinguishable and say, okay, well, that's that part of them, and then there's this part of them, and you can distinguish them. But if you see them as connected, then it seems like it would poison the whole thing. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I guess I'm thinking more in the terms of as from the field of literature, as thinking fiction, as thinking art, as thinking not so much theory, you know.
Right. Or
so to me, I can do that easier. I can enjoy a painting by someone who was, you know, who I found abhorrent what they did. I could enjoy a song. I could enjoy you know, if, and part of that is it's just if I'd rather be willfully ignorant. I don't need to know necessarily about who they are and what they are. To me, that's old school. It's the text. I have the text right here. And
so if you let's say you see a painting, that's a wonderful painting, and then you find out just something off of the painter. You know, they murdered their whole family, whatever. Something really just awful. I mean, you can still look at the painting aesthetically and appreciate it, but doesn't it poison the experience? Does it poison the experience at all for you? Because now when you look at the painting, you do think about that other thing. I mean, even if you can compartmentalize it.
It does, but then that goes back to, you know, to tie it back to what we started with, this idea of, does it poison it if Adrian Peterson gets exonerated and goes back to playing, and I like the Vikings, and he tears it up and does really good. Can I enjoy it in the same way?
If he's exonerated, that's different, right?
Well, but even if he's exonerated, it's still not different because I saw the pictures. And I don't care what the law says.
Oh, okay.
That's regardless.
Right. So that's not quite exoneration. Like exoneration would be that he's completely guilt-free, but right. that there's and he's, some. Right.
He's not. In that sense, and however I want to think about it, so it'll always color kind of how I see him. So I think it would be interesting to see if that's something different. I mean, I have no trouble rooting for the Steelers, despite whatever may have or did not occur with.
Well, now is that because the information was so inconclusive? I mean, if it was more conclusive about what happened, would that? I mean, I guess that's a counterfactual. That's hard to answer, right? I mean, if he's actually brought up on charges of rape,
right? Well, yeah, definitely.
That would be different. Like, I would imagine. I would hope for you, but it would be a challenge, right? I mean, when you come down to it, right? I mean, no matter what we think we might know about athletes, celebrities, we really don't, because even when they speak their mind, that could still also just be part of an image that they're. That they're crafting, right? And so we don't really ever know them, right? And so that's why, I mean, I certainly, now this is maybe more of an adult position that maybe kids don't do this, although I think they do, right, is to look at them as an athlete, as a writer, as an actor, whatever, and be able to appreciate what they do in their sphere without... and admire them for that without having that admiration extend to them as a whole. And I think that's something that we can do and we recognize. And I think kids do that too. I mean, it's anecdotal just based on the kids that I've known and looking back on my own experience. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's, you know, if that's a minority thing or if that's a majority thing, but it does strike me that we do those kinds of things all the time, that because we admire someone's work in one way, that doesn't mean we have to admire their whole thing. Or if we find one aspect of their behavior or thoughts to be against our values, that spoils the whole thing. Although it does seem to bleed both ways, though. I mean, there's some bleeding there.
I really enjoy Ender's Game, the novel.
Yeah.
When I learned more about the author.
It's a little weird.
You know, I'm like, gosh... You know, but then I thought. Then I just let it go. I'm like, I like the novel. I guess I think it's easy.
It might be easy to do for fiction. That would be an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah.
Maybe because they're just telling a story, so it's not.
No, it's not just a story. That's a whole different.
I don't mean just telling a story, but I mean because it's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that, you know. Allows for greater disassociation of things for us because it's already disassociated to a degree. But then, I don't know. I mean, athletics is similar like that too because it's a special world that's created within the context of playing a game. Mm-hmm. So that might have shared characteristics.
That's where it's fiction in a sense. I mean, they come onto the field and they put a uniform on. They're playing a role for us to watch. It has nothing to do with them individually, what their lives are like, in one sense. So when you can say that's the ultimate kind of fiction in a sense.
Yeah, no, I think there's something to that. So it sounds like it doesn't sound like we really come to anything conclusive, which is fine, right? That's not necessarily the point of what we're trying to do, but... of raising different issues. So it's interesting because this issue is not new, right? I mean, I don't remember when Barkley first said his comment, but I mean, that was 20 years ago at least, right? And, you know, and it was an issue before that, and it's going to be an issue. And so I think there's a lot of ways to tease it out, right? Which, you know, we've only just suggested some ways, right? Role model. What is a role model?
Well, and with Barkley, he says he doesn't want to be a role model, but he's been a pretty good individual since retiring from the NBA as far as what he's done. He's humorous. He's done a lot of... He's having fun. He's not, you know...
He's an honest commentator.
Talking about a post-career, good commentator. He's not... So, I mean, in a sense, he's done fine.
Yeah. His point, I don't think, was I'm not a role model. I can behave badly.
Right.
I think his point was more, look, you shouldn't be looking to me for moral guidance. You should be looking to your family, your parents, yourself right, as the source of moral guidance. And in that respect, I think he's definitely right, right? I mean, we should be looking, that's, the moral guidance shouldn't be coming from strangers that we don't really know just because they excel in one aspect of their lives.
Yeah, and I don't think it does. And I think that's where I think the false kind of
right
warrant is, in a sense.
Yeah, so I mean, I think Berkeley's right in that respect, but this other thing about further obligations, or maybe better, responsibilities that people might have given their respective positions, because there's this public image aspect to it. Mm-hmm. That's a little different than just talking about being a role model, right? Yeah. I mean, some of it is, okay, well, yeah, making sure that you're just not engaging in illegal or moral behavior, right? Both from a practical perspective of that's going to undermine your image and going to mm-hmm. put you in jail, or, you know, all these kinds of things. But also just, you know, the moral perspective that's right. you have this platform, and so you're a person. You should be engaging in that kind of behavior anyway.
And right? It's paradoxical at its core, because you have this platform, therefore you should be aware of how you behave, and you should. But on the other hand, you have this platform, therefore you can't say what you want to say.
Yeah,
we don't want you to. So I mean, that's where I think the mixed signals come in, and I think that's why it's such an interesting and maddening kind of thing to think about, because we want it both ways.
And, right, we want the athletes to be honest and to speak their mind, and then when we do, we trash them.
Yeah,
right. And you know, I can't believe you said that. Well, you told me to speak my mind. You know, and so. You know, it's we want you to speak your mind and be honest. You just better make sure that you agree with us, and and that's not a good place to be, and it's not a good. I don't envy the athletes, and I think that's why Brady stayed silent on it. It's not that he wanted, that he was just thinking about his brand, or that he was in some way in support of these folks. I think he's just saying, look, this. I have no special expertise on this matter. I'm a quarterback, and that's what I do, and that's what I'm going to focus on. And for me to go beyond that, I'm just going to. There's no way I can win. I'm just going to make somebody mad one way or the other. And so, you know, staying silent made some people mad too. I guess at that point, you know, you don't worry about whether or not you're going to piss people off.
Right.
You worry about how can you do what you want to do best? And I think that in Brady's case, you know, it probably makes sense for him not to focus on these kinds of external issues, because he's got to prepare for a game and try
to score more than
12 points. Yeah, exactly. Well, not for you, but just for the team, right? He's got to play better. And so, you know, it's still unclear to me what the nature of these obligations are, if they are there, but there does seem to be something that having that platform does come with something, some mm-hmm. kind of responsibility. How to cash that out? I mean, some of it I think is going to be individual, right? In terms of what kinds of things are important to you,
yeah.
right? And do you have, is some kind of, I don't want to say mission, but some cause or something that is really close to you, and you want to try to use and leverage your position to do that, then I don't have a problem with that. I may not agree with your cause, and that may mm-hmm. lead me not to be as much as a fan, but that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And conversely, that there's probably, you know, some special additional restrictions on or constraints on your behavior because you're in the public. And like you said, I mean, as professors in the community, you know, that might affect the way we think about how we might take action, or whether or not we should say something publicly in, mm-hmm. in a forum or something like that, just given how that might be perceived. I don't think it's a hard constraint, but I think it might be something that's there. You were going to say something?
Yeah, no, I said, but it's there. And, there's a wide range of professions that have that in different degrees, depending on what you're doing. You know,
right.
There's some that jobs that just don't really, but I mean, once you get a certain type of visibility and responsibility in your position, whatever career it is, it puts different expectations on you.
Yeah. Well, I think expectations might be a good way to think about them rather than obligations, which when you start talking about obligations, then I start to think, okay, well, then if you don't meet those obligations, you're doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, expectations, maybe you're disappointed, maybe you're not doing as well as you could, but you're not necessarily doing something wrong if you haven't met those expectations. So that might be a better way to think about these roles and the expectations that come along with the roles in terms of what you're going to do. Other things you want to say?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think I'm...
I mean, we could probably continue for quite a while.
Of course.
But that's, I think, all we have time for.
Best month of sports is coming up in October.
Why is that?
That's playoff baseball.
Playoff baseball, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How the Sox doing?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Football. Although, Patriots aren't doing wonderfully either. Bruins are starting up, though, so that's good. This has been the Sports Ethics Podcast. You can find us at sportsethicist.com, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can email the show at sportsethicist@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.